This podcast is brought to you by Penji. Penji is a creative subscription service that gives you access to pre-vetted, agency-trained creatives from all over the world. From graphic design to illustrations to social media management and web development, it's all included for one monthly price. It's time to say goodbye to the hassle of searching for top-notch creative talent. With Penji, you get quality and consistency delivered right to your inbox every day. Carefully crafted for you by humans. So meet your new creative team today. Head over to penji.co for more and enter the coupon code located within the podcast show notes.
Okay, hello everybody. Welcome to the First 100 podcast. This is where we discuss and explore the journey of entrepreneurs, business owners, and agency leaders as they share their strategies, challenges, and triumphs that have led them to secure their first 100 customers, 100 followers, first 100. I'm your host, Daniela, and I'm Penji's partnership coordinator. Today, I'm joined here with a very special guest, Jessica Stansberry. Hi, Jessica. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Very happy to have you on the podcast today.
Yeah, same. I'm excited to be here.
Excited too. For anybody who wants to get to know you, who doesn't know who you are, is just getting to know you from this podcast, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do?
Yes, sure. So I have been in the digital marketing space for a long time now. In 2010, I actually started my first full-time business after my son was born, and I was doing web design and graphic design. And that eventually in 2015 or 2016 kind of morphed into teaching people how to do the things, like teaching people how to market, teaching people how to do email marketing, teaching people how to do YouTube eventually. And so that is where I'm at now, is I teach a lot of, like, you know, how-to strategies when it comes to content marketing, when it comes to creation, when it comes to marketing in general. I live in the mountains of North Carolina and just hanging out here with my cows outside. So
with your cows, teaching marketing.
That's what I do. I teach marketing in the middle of the cows.
So it's quite interesting to me that you were more involved in the graphic design and web design space, and then you sort of migrated over to marketing. What made you want to do that switch instead of teaching graphic design actual methods or something like that?
Yeah, so I have a degree in advertising. So my degree from college is in advertising with a minor in marketing and business. And so that has always been at the core of what I am and the core of what I love. And when it came to web design and graphic design, it was really because I needed something to be able to make money to stay home with my kid when he was born. And I was like, what can I do really fast? And so I was like 24 and I was like, okay, this sounds good. And then so I started doing web design and graphic design. And so I always liked it, but it wasn't like my passion by any means. And so when I started kind of getting into the more teaching space, it wasn't even, I actually did teach a little bit of that at first. But it kind of was like a natural progression. So because I was a web designer, people were coming to me and asking me web design questions. And so I would answer these web design questions, but then that would like bring up other questions. And so I was asking, or I was answering these marketing questions. And so it just kind of snowballed and went in the direction of marketing a lot, because that's the direction I wanted it to go. I didn't really want to teach graphic design or web design. But also because that's the direction people were asking questions in. So it just kind of naturally went that way.
Yeah, well, graphic design and marketing are very hand in hand, right? We do graphic design at Penji. That's kind of what our thing is, right? And we also have a lot of people who need to outsource their graphic design.
Yeah.
Who need to learn how to sort of ask for those designs, right? Especially with things like UX, UI, when they're like, okay, I want a website. But then it's like, you have to tell them, like, we can do that for you, but you need to have something in mind first. That's very important before you tell me, make me a website.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And even when people do have something in mind, half the time they don't actually have the right thing in mind. And so, you know, it was an interesting industry that I just didn't want to be in anymore, you know?
Yeah. So, can you tell us a little bit about your journey to, you've obviously grown a lot, and you said you've been doing content since 2016, which is a while now. How has that growth been? How have that journey been? When did you actually start seeing traction from your videos and, you know, people actually listening to the stuff that you had to say? How has that growth happened for you?
Yeah. So in 2015, so late 2015, I actually started a podcast first. So like that was my first kind of content creation beyond just like Instagram or my blog at the time, which didn't have any traffic, so it didn't matter anyway. And so I had a podcast that I co-hosted, and that actually did really, really well for both of us. We had it for about 3 years, and it was, you know, it was kind of in the earlier ages of everybody and their mama having a business podcast, you know? So it did really well because there wasn't a ton of us yet. And then in 2016, that's when I started on YouTube, but I started on YouTube to mainly like grow my blog. Like I started on YouTube to be able to have videos to go with my blog posts. And I really didn't ever kind of see YouTube as a thing. And then one day in 2017, I logged in. So about a year later, I logged in because I was uploading a video and I had 500 subscribers. And I was like, how did that happen? I haven't even ever, like I'd never promoted the channel. The only reason it was there was to like be embedded on my blog. And so I was like, that's interesting. And when I really dug into the analytics, I realized like some of my videos were doing really well. And I thought, you know, what would happen if I actually tried? Like if I can get 500 subscribers without trying, what would happen if I tried? And that was in like July of 2017. And from July to September, I grew about 1,000 more subscribers because I was actually trying. And then that next year, I grew from like 1,500 or so to 30,000. I hit 100,000 in 2020. That's when I got my like 100,000 subscriber plaque thing. And I've just kind of grown since then. And I'll have times of like not a lot of growth and times of a ton of growth. And it's just kind of, it's a journey. You know, I look at YouTube as a marathon and not a sprint. And so sometimes, you know, I'm walking and sometimes I'm running, and that's okay because I mean, most people have not been on YouTube for 8 years. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like explosive growth, I think we're very used to seeing it because it's the loudest one,
mm-hmm.
but it's not the most popular or most common thing. I would say that happens to most creators, right?
Right. Totally. And honestly, like had I had explosive growth, you know, 5 years ago, I wouldn't have known what to do with it. And so like, you know, I've had some big periods of growth, but never like, oh, I went from 10,000 to 100,000 overnight or whatever. I wouldn't have known what to do with that. And so now I'm more prepared that like when I do have big, you know, pieces of growth or big moments of growth, I actually know what to do with that traffic. And I actually know how to like turn that into dollars, you know?
Yeah. So actually, I think, and I was talking to someone about this earlier, growth for people is actually a lot more complicated and stressful than I think most people see it as. And
yeah.
Explosive growth is very difficult because you go from 0 to 100 really quick. And I think there's a lot that goes in between that 0 to 100 that people don't take into account, right? For example, I think for us, like we do graphic design as an outsourcing tool, essentially, right? Because we sort of saw this gap in the market where it was really difficult to outsource graphic design for business owners. That part sort of is very, I think, scary for people, which is what do I do? I don't have like enough hands. I don't have enough of a brain. I am only one person, but I have so much. And who do I even give it to? How did you even like, as your growth started happening, how were you able to handle all of that and sort of start to scale and grow, especially with content creation? I think it happens a lot where content creators are sort of blindsided when all of a sudden they need assistants and managers and things like that.
Oh, for sure. So I really have always been very like, I need help. Like, I need help. I can't do all this by myself. And I think a lot of that was because I also had small children when I was growing my business. And so, like, I was like, I can't do all this. Like, I can't be changing a diaper and, like, answering an email at the same time, you know? And so, even early on in my business, I hired a virtual assistant. And it was very, very minimal cost. Like, I don't even remember now, but it was very minimal cost, very minimal hours, but it helped me so much. Like, I was able to, like, free up little things. So that person edited my podcast. They also answered my emails or helped me filter my emails. And that really helped. And then I really just kept that kind of mode going the whole way. And so eventually, you know, I added more hours to that virtual assistant. I added another virtual assistant who maybe had some specialized skills in graphic design or in content creation or whatever. I know at one point I had someone who would take my YouTube videos and write blog posts that match them. And then, you know, I've had video editors and things like that. And so it's just kind of, I think because I've always been okay and good with hiring help, and I've always had it. At least since 2015, I didn't have it before that, but, I'm okay with, like, seeing that, like, the world is not going to burn down if I need to spend an extra $100 or $200, you know, this week or whatever, to get somebody to come in. And again, as I've grown, that cost has grown, but I've also made more money, so it's okay.
Yeah, obviously. I'm curious because you did graphic design, and so you have knowledge of graphic design. A lot of people tend to outsource things like video editing and graphic design because they don't have that kind of expertise. And, you know, they're like, I'm not willing to learn how to use Illustrator for this, right?
Right.
But I think it's really interesting when you are actually knowledgeable about this, because I think I've seen people who struggle with outsourcing things that they are experts in, I'd say, or that they know about. Like, a graphic designer is going to really struggle outsourcing graphic design to another designer because they're like, oh, I really want to do this. Mm-hmm. Or because they have, like, visions in mind of what they were envisioning for this page to look like, or whatever, logo or something. Mm-hmm. How has that journey been for you of, like, learning to give it to someone else?
Yeah, it's definitely been a struggle, I will say. And I'm very picky on who I hire to take on those kind of things because I do know how to do it. I can do it. And I am very picky about it. So I'm kind of picky on, like, oh, well, I need to see, like, specific criteria by people or a specific style or something where I feel like they'll actually get what I'm trying to do, rather than just being able to, like, hand it to anybody, because that doesn't feel good to me. And a lot of it is, you know, knowing that me taking the time, so me taking, let's say, 2 hours or whatever to make graphics or whatever the scenario is, edit a video. And knowing that 2 hours could have been better spent by me actually strategizing in my business or spending time with my kids or, you know, something I wanted to do, that really helps me say, okay, I can outsource this. It is fine. And if they come back and I don't like it, I just tell them I don't like it. And we go from there. Like, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. Just doing it.
Yeah. Sometimes.
One. Definitely. I think, like, I also wanted to ask you, because I think that this is a very sort of jarring thing for a lot of people who are growing on their business, which is, how did you learn to have someone work for you full time? You know, like, actually realize, I think when you do, like, one-off projects, like, I think a lot of people tend to outsource to sort of Fiverr type of things where it's like, you know, I'm going to pay you one time and then you do this thing and then that's it. Bye. We're done. And it was $60. It got what I wanted. And that's useful for the beginning when you don't have that kind of demand for a lot of things, right? But when if you're a content creator and now you need to start putting out videos monthly, you need to hit a certain quota of videos and you need graphics for every video. You can't have a designer do one thing every 6 months, right? You sort of need that constant. When that moment happens and you realize you need to have someone more permanent there to do it for you, it can be really scary for people because they're like, I don't know if I'm going to have, like, enough work. You know, this is kind of scary. You're my employee. Now your livelihood depends on me.
Yes.
How did you manage that?
That is, I mean, it's still scary, to be honest. I hired my first full-time employee in 2020, and now I have two full-time employees. And it's still scary. There's still months when, like, the income isn't what it was last month or 2 months ago or whatever, where I'm like, but the biggest thing was I was never spending outside of my means. You know, I was always like, okay, I know that I'm making X, Y, and Z. And I usually had already kind of been spending that money with contractors. So I, you know, I was already spending $1,000 here for this or $2,000 there for that or $500 there for this. And so, you know, taking those jobs away from those contractors and giving them to my employees made more sense. Mainly because, you know, having somebody dedicated to my business is a really big deal, you know, and I was really struggling a lot with some of the contractors when, you know, they'd have other projects going on. And so I wasn't their like number one, you know, thing.
Yes.
And so I would struggle with that because I'd be like, I don't feel like they did enough for me or whatever. And since hiring employees, I don't have that feeling at all. I feel like, you know, they're totally mine and they work for me and that's it.
Yeah. And definitely, I think a huge thing that people don't realize that they need is continuity, right? I think when you have a contractor or a freelancer, they have other projects, right? Or they're kind of just there sporadically. They are kind of losing awareness of your brand, of your project, of your vision. And so then it's like you have to go back to that discussion table and be like, no, right now we're trying to like do this with our marketing or do that. And, you know, we're trying to create this kind of content. Whereas when you have someone who's constant, they can be more, you know, in tune with everything that's happening and the changes that are happening within.
Oh, totally. Absolutely. I kind of went from like freelancers and virtual assistants and things like that to OBMs and more like high level roles of like online business managers. But again, they had like six clients, right? And so that I felt like that was happening with them and I was paying them a lot. And so I was like, there's got to be a better way. And that's when full-time employees came. And let me tell you, when I decided to hire my first full-time employee, then when I decided to hire my second, both have been very, very scary moments, you know, for me. But we've lived. We've made it through it. It's been okay.
Yeah. I mean, and it's definitely a lot scarier for someone like yourself who you're just a person, right? It's different for like a big corporation, like, I don't know, Pringles or Coca-Cola. You're just like, they can just go up and hire whoever. And
yeah,
you know, they have like a big team and they're definitely making enough money to pay for it.
Right.
Yeah. So actually, it's very interesting that you say that because for us, we started at the company with kind of that vision in mind where we saw this problem happening for us within the marketing world. And we were trying to outsource graphic design and it was really difficult because it was like, I think there's a lot of business owners who don't necessarily, if you're not at a place where you can hire someone yet, but you're also not at a place where you can't not have someone, that's a very weird middle to be in, right?
Yeah.
And we started sort of putting Penji as platform for people to outsource graphic design in a more affordable way, but still without having to sacrifice quality, which is kind of like everything that we do, which is for people to just kind of, you know, you pay a subscription, kind of like it where it was Netflix, and then you can put in design work and you don't have to worry about maybe you don't have enough work for this person or how difficult it is to find one. Because I think a lot of people don't really take a lot of that into consideration, which is how expensive it actually is to have someone work for you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And what's really cool about like finding contractors or hiring things out is that a lot of people also don't see the other side. They don't see that like they think it's going to cost them thousands of dollars a month to hire help when it's probably not. And you could get some things off your plate for a couple $100 a month or something like that. And that could help you tremendously.
Yeah, definitely. I think like outsourcing is a very difficult process to go through when you are growing a business because it's a transition. Okay. I think what I've noticed with people growing their businesses is once they have it sort of, they have the science down, you know, and now their business is growing and it's like, I just figured out how to do this. And now I have like a million new problems.
Yes. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, where it's like, okay, now I have to learn how to outsource. And then this is like a whole new process. And now things have to evolve and have to change. And I think that's why, like, I think growth like yours that has been a little bit more stable is more sustainable, I think, in the long run. Because if you have explosive growth, all of that is going to happen at once and you're just going to be really overwhelmed with it.
Oh, completely. Completely. I say all the time that you don't actually want to go viral. Like, you do, but you don't, I swear. Because when you do, and you do it like more steady, and you have small bouts of virality, and you have small bouts of growth that kind of are a steady system, rather than this like huge, you know, like, oh, I just rose to fame in 5 minutes or whatever. It's much easier to handle. It's much easier to like baby step into it, and you don't make decisions on the fly, which I think can make, you know, bad decisions for a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely. I think we've seen a lot of people have that kind of downfall where it's like, I've had a bad manager, I had a bad business deal, mm-hmm. you know, I got, especially in the earlier years of social media. I think now people are a little bit more savvy because they've seen mm-hmm. a lot of other people's failures. But I remember like back in like when you started back in like 2016, 2014, I think even, a lot of people were sort of getting conned by a lot of fake managers and the agencies that were putting them in like these really bad contracts. And just in general, I think that has sort of, I've seen a lot of that downfall for a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree. I have too.
Yeah, so it's actually very good that you have sort of learned through that process. And I think a lot of people that are trying to grow in content creation will feel happy that they, you know, that like explosive growth is not necessarily the best thing ever. I'm also curious about how you felt through like this whole, you've been on social media for so long. You were on YouTube when it was a very different space. How has all of the change that's happened on social media throughout all these years affected you and your platform?
Honestly, I feel like YouTube has changed the least of any platforms. Instagram is basically a different platform. Facebook is basically a different platform. TikTok didn't even exist back then, right? But YouTube really has been like the most steady because the things that work now are just iterations of the things that worked then. So yeah, there might not be exact things that like have come, you know, there it's not exactly the same algorithm as it was in 2016, but it's pretty close. And so there's not really, there hasn't been a lot of times on YouTube where I'm like, oh, they changed everything up and now I don't know what I'm doing. And on Instagram and on Facebook and things like that, that has been the case, you know. And with Instagram, well, with that, I guess, I have really seen for the last probably 5 years where I keep YouTube as my main content creation platform because I know how to do that. I know how to do that really well. I know how to make videos. I know how to course correct if something goes wrong, that kind of thing. And I keep Instagram as a secondary platform. And so I don't really care or try to keep up with content there. You know, I will do content there and I will create content there, but I don't like see it as my like main source of income or anything like that. So yeah, I just kind of go with the flow. Like I'm a big, like I love change. Change doesn't bother me at all. As long as I understand it or like as long as I can like adapt to it well. And so for me, I'm just like, hey, let's just keep going with what's working. And as things change, we just do it. And it's never really failed me.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like what you said is really interesting because I think also the audiences that are on platforms have changed. Like I remember back in 2012, Facebook was for like the cool people.
Right. Yes.
Facebook is not for cool people now.
No. No, the only reason I'm still on Facebook as a whole is just so I can post pictures of my kids. Like, literally, that is it. And so that they'll pop back up on memories in, like, 2 years or whatever. That is it, because it is not the platform. See, when I first started in, like, 2015, 2016, Facebook Lives were such a thing. Like, that was how it grew. Yes. And then, like, that got killed, and, like, people don't do that anymore. Or if they do, it's weird. And so, yeah, it's it's been kind of a fun ride to be able to watch a lot of the social media as someone who's on it.
Yeah, and definitely, like you said, I think YouTube has changed because it has changed, but it's definitely the more stable one because it's still like a long form video platform, yeah. Which is what it has always been.
Yeah, exactly.
But Instagram used to just be for like, I remember also just like, you know, you would just post a random picture of your dinner with no lighting. You would just add some random filter. It was really ugly. And then, you know, you have like a really purple salad bowl. And that was that.
And literally that was it. Like when I first started on Instagram, I mean, it was that. It was there was a stint of time. There was an era, I guess, where everybody was posting like stock photos. You know, you didn't really do anything with it. It was just there, which is still funny to me. And then there was the time when, you know, you had to have 10,000 followers to get the link in your bio. And it's just changed so much.
Yeah, it really has. And TikTok also coming in and like kind of doing all of this has changed it a lot.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah.
But I wished, as a content creator, I wish that everybody would stop trying to be TikTok. Like, I hate YouTube Shorts. I hate Instagram Reels. I don't hate it, but like I wish that wasn't all we had to do, you know? Which thankfully with YouTube, so that's another piece too, is with Instagram, once they started Reel, they were like, that's it. That's all you're allowed to do. If you do anything else, you suck. And Reels is the only way to grow. It's like Reels, 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 Reels. And every time they come out with like an algorithm update, it's just like Reels, you know? Whereas YouTube has not stunted the growth of long form channels if they don't use Shorts. It's just that Shorts are another tool there. And so, I really wish if they're going to try and be TikTok that they wouldn't like push all of their efforts to that like Instagram has. But yeah, like it's I don't know. It is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. TikTok sort of started this short form trend and now it's just everywhere. And I agree that, you know, like now on Instagram, it's a very different environment. Even if you're not a content creator, like just as a normal user, I get pushed Reels all the time, like either to watch or to create. It's like, oh, here's a collage for you to make a reel of your last Instagram stories. And it's like, I don't mean to be into a reel.
Right. I know. I don't get it. I really don't get it, but I'm not Instagram. So here we are.
Well, it's been great talking to you today and learning from you. I think a lot of people who are aspiring content creators really get a lot of knowledge from people like you, because I think a lot of people think that growth is just, you know, like you got a video viral and then you have a million followers from like you woke up in the morning and it's like, I'm famous now. So it's great that, you know, to have people like you tell us about your experiences, your growth, how it has happened over the years. And people who have experience outside of content creation, I think, are very valuable because you have real world experience on other things that are not just the video aspect. So I wanted to just say thank you so much for being here and doing this with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been so fun.
For anybody who would want to learn more about you or go in and see your videos after all of this, the floor is yours to tell us about your YouTube channel and where we can find you.
Sure. So my website is just heyjessica.com and everything's linked from there. So if you forget anything else we talk about, heyjessica.com, it's really easy. And then my YouTube channel is just my name. My Instagram is just my name. So Jessica Stansberry. And I hang out mostly on YouTube with really focusing on being in the stories and DMs on my Instagram. That's where I like to connect with my audience. Come hang out with me there and check me out on YouTube and we can have a chat.
For sure. Yeah. I will be adding your links to the description of this so that everybody can go in and find you. Thank you so much, Jessica, for being here. And I will see everybody on the next episode.
Thank you. Bye.
You've been listening to Fully Managed, brought to you by Penji. Check out the show notes to learn more about today's guest. And to learn more about Penji, the human first creative subscription service, head over to penji.co. And by the way, if you're still listening, it would mean the absolute world to us if you were to share this podcast with a friend and, of course, subscribe.